About half of our workers say that it would be difficult for them to come up with just 1,000 rupees in an emergency. 1,000 rupees is just 4 days of earnings, and they don't even have that much on hand.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Why is poverty so persistent? It's a problem that's at the heart of development economics. And on Vox Dev Talks in the past, we've covered credit constraints, of course, institutions, the role of education, and we've also touched on the functional impact of poverty itself. If you can't afford to eat before you go and do a day's work, or you can't buy the tools you need to do your job, your journey out of poverty is going to be that much longer. But there's another possible explanation that's getting a lot of attention. Does the mental strain of poverty itself cause bad choices? If so, there's a huge potential for policy interventions to improve the lives of poor people everywhere. An experiment in India has tested this assumption, and the results, set out in a new working paper, are remarkable and are grabbing the attention of both researchers and policymakers. Supreet Kaur is one of those authors, and she joins me on the line from Berkeley today. Supreet, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hello, Tim.
We all think we've experienced financial stress when someone pays us late or a surprise bill lands in our mailbox. But it's important to understand, isn't it, that we're talking about a completely different order of strain here, aren't we?
Yeah, that's correct. And I'd say not only a higher level of strain, but possibly also a different kind of strain in terms of its psychological consequences. So, you know, a lot of us are familiar with stress. We encounter it in our lives daily. The juggling act of, you know, my daughter is sick and has to be home from daycare. And so now I'm trying to work from home and trying to finish a deadline. If you think about that level of stress, while it, of course, is taxing, it doesn't rise to the same level of consequence as receiving an eviction notice because you haven't managed to pay rent for 2 months. And now you're thinking about how you're going to get through the next month with two kids who might be out on the streets, or, you know, the constant juggling act that the poor often do, figuring out, okay, this month, do I pay my utility bill or should I pay my mortgage? So maybe I'll pay my mortgage because my utility bill is up to date. So I won't really get my electricity shut off for a good 2 months if I don't pay it. So let me just get good on my mortgage so I don't get that eviction notice. That kind of life-changing consequence of the decisions you're making, of the strain that you're facing, causes a level of mental tax that I think is an order of magnitude different than the one that comes from the very legitimate stress many of us face in our day-to-day lives. And I think that's the kind of stress we're thinking about in our research when we think about what is it about poverty that causes such a psychological load on the poor.
Yes, and for the working people in the experiment that you did, what are the specific causes of their financial stress? You offered them jobs. We'll explain the experiment in a minute. But when you offered them the jobs, what sort of stress were they experiencing?
So we ran this experiment in India during the agricultural lean season in a pretty poor part of the country. And so during the agricultural lean season, you know, workers tend to try to find short-term non-agricultural work because there isn't agricultural work to be had. So this might be construction work or some low-skilled manufacturing work. But this kind of work is very scarce. And so unemployment tends to be extremely high during the lean season. To give you a sense, workers in our sample typically only get something like 10 days of work in a month. And so as a result, they're super strapped for cash. So they're struggling to meet expenses, you know, whether it's to buy groceries or things for the house or medicines for their kids. And they tend to use loans to get through the lean season until work picks up again. Actually, an astonishing 83% of the workers in our sample have outstanding loans before they're hired by us.
Wow, I can see how hiring them will reduce their financial stress, but how did you manage to vary the impact of the financial strain that they were under while they were working for you?
Yeah, so, you know, we actually did something very simple. So we hired workers for two-week contract jobs to do low-skilled manufacturing work to make disposable plates. Before they were hired, workers were told, okay, you're going to work for us for 2 weeks, and at the end of the 2 weeks, you'll be paid for the contract work that you did, which is pretty standard. But then for a subset of workers, we did something slightly different. What we did is, instead of paying them everything at the end, we paid them some of their earnings early, partway through the experiment, about 10 days into the job. So for some workers, workers, they got paid all the way at the end. And some workers got paid what they had earned up until day 10, on day 10. And then they got whatever was left over that they earned, you know, on the last day with everyone else. This means everybody was paid the same amount, but for some workers, they got part of their payment midway through instead of having to wait until the end for it. And then this early payment was a big cash windfall for these workers. It amounts to something like a month's worth of typical earnings for them. And so then what that allows us to do is we can look at the difference between those who get the early cash and those who don't. The differences in what they do with that money when they get it early relative to those who haven't yet gotten the money in their pockets reveal to us the impact of having cash in your pocket.
How did you measure the positive outcome here?
We wanted to do it in two steps. The first thing we want to do is to say, get a sense of, well, does this cash windfall actually matter? And then we want to look to see, is it actually a consequential thing to receive it? And then we want to see, okay, what impacts does it have in the workplace on workers' productivity? So for the first step, what we do is we just look at what people do with the money once they get it. So we just do some surveys with both the people who got the money early and those who didn't, immediately after day 10 and those couple of days right after the cash was dispersed to the early group. And we see that people who got the cash early do go out and do two things. The first thing is they go off and pay off their loans. And in fact, there's a 40 percentage point increase in how often people go off and pay off loans. And then they go buy things for their house, like groceries. And that's just within the first 2 days of receiving that cash. And so as you can imagine, that gives us a lot of reassurance that getting this cash in their hands really does reduce financial strain on them because they're paying off loans or buying things that they need. And then with that, we now look and say, okay, well, what does that mean for what they do at the workplace? Because our interest was in understanding whether reducing financial strain can actually have a positive feedback effect on how productive workers are at work. And so in our setting, these workers were all paid piece rates for work. So they get paid based on how much they produce. And so how hard they work or how much they work directly translates into the earnings that they get to take home. And what we find is that when workers are paid early, in the days after that early cash payment, they become more productive at work. So we see a 5% increase in productivity for the sample as a whole. And for the poorer workers in our sample, for whom, you know, this cash drop was really meaningful because they at baseline started off poorer with less assets and so on. For them, the productivity increases are really large. They're 10%, possibly because the impact of cash on them was just more meaningful. And so we see these big gains in productivity.
Absolutely. This is a huge impact. But can you be sure that that's due to relieving this financial strain that they're under? It's not just that they feel great about you because you're clearly an excellent employer.
Well, yes, I'd like to think so. It's a great question, and it's something we wanted to really isolate and nail in the way that we designed the study. And so we do a couple of things to try to understand what really is driving this increase in productivity. So for us, the smoking gun comes from looking at not just the level of productivity, but how their productivity is actually changing. The helpful thing about the tasks that they're doing, making these disposable plates, is that they allow us to track whether they're working not just harder, but also able to work smarter in the way that they produce these plates. So to do that, I have to tell you a little bit about how they're made. These disposable plates are a very common commodity in India. You go to any roadside tavern in our area and, like, you know, you eat off of these leaf plates, essentially, that are stitched together by taking dried sal leaves, and you stitch them together with these wooden twigs, and that creates this disposable plate that you can eat on. When workers are stitching these plates together, you can tell if they've made a mistake while working, because if they've made a mistake, say they're putting the leaves together and the plate starts becoming lopsided, then what they'll have to do is undo the work they've done. So they'll have to take out the stitches and then start all over again. What that does is it leaves a telltale sign in the plate, because you can see the holes from where the stitch has been removed. And that kind of mistake is super costly for workers, because they've done the work to start making it, and then they had to undo it and then redo it again. And ultimately, they're only going to get paid for the finished plate. And so what we do is we actually measure markers of these kinds of attentional errors in production in the plates that they're making. And so we look at a few things. We look at these double holes, these mistakes that they're making in making the plates. We count how efficiently they're working. So how many leaves that they have to use to make the plate? Were they able to use fewer leaves, which means less work to make a plate, which you ultimately only get paid the same amount, no matter how many leaves you put in, how many stitches you put in. So if you were strategic strategic in placing things, you'll be able to make that plate that much faster and move on to the next one. And what we find is that workers' productivity is increasing, at least in part because they're becoming more efficient. They're making less of these attentional mistakes in production. If they were just feeling differently about the employer, it's not clear why that would change, because they're only hurting themselves when they do that kind of thing. So it does feel like they're just becoming sharper in how they work. So that's kind of the big thing that we do. And then the other kind of stuff that we, you know, built into the design, which is what one has to do to isolate mechanisms, is we announced the cash payment early. We announced it, you know, if workers were paid on day 10, the early amount of money, we announced on something like day 5 or 6 that they would be paid early. We told people, okay, actually, you're going to get paid on this earlier date. And if workers were just super pleased with us as employers because they were getting money early, you might expect an uptick in productivity right after the announcement. So on day 6. And so we monitor that. And what we find is that that doesn't really do anything. It's really only when the money's in their hands and they're able to go home and spend it and pay off those loans or so on, only then do we see the increases in productivity.
You did mention that many of the people who were paid early bought groceries with the money that they had.
Yep.
So the other explanation perhaps is that they could have a decent meal before they came to work. That would help them to concentrate.
Absolutely. Certainly true for me. So I think that the couple of things I would say around that is, first is, even if that were the mechanism, I think that would still be pretty important from a poverty alleviation perspective, because if people, if one of the mechanisms, right, through which people are not being able to work hard and earn money is because they're just, you know, undernourished, then that's important and is a clear policy lever through which, or it helps us understand how poverty could affect productivity. But in our case, that's appears not to be the case. And this is how we know. If you think about how an increase in calories could affect your productivity, there's two possible channels. The first is just some underlying change in your body's nutritional status, but that can't happen overnight. That takes some time to accumulate. And we see effects right away. Like they come in the next day and they're more productive. The other explanation, which is the one that you've hinted at, they now have more money. They're able to have breakfast in the morning and then they come in with full bellies and then they're able to start the day off and work harder. And that could be causing the increase in productivity. In our setting, we can look to see what happens to these productivity effects over the course of the day. We can look hour by hour. And so we can even look, you know, later in the day, say 5 p.m., or we can look after lunch, because in some of our rounds, we actually provide everybody with lunch. And if it's just this blood sugar effect that I just had food in my stomach in the morning, that kind of effect should then taper off. And the two groups should look very similar by the end of the day, say 5 p.m. In fact, those differences in productivity persist throughout the day and are pretty constant throughout the day. And even when we give people lunch and we look at what happens right after lunch, we don't see differences in their productivity. So it doesn't seem to be the case that they're just eating more in the morning and are more productive. And then the other thing we do actually is we just ask them what they had for breakfast. And in our setting, breakfast seems to be pretty homogenous. Everybody just has rice in the morning. And so it also doesn't seem to be that what they're eating in the morning changes. I think the food changes are happening more at dinner the night before.
You measured these impacts over a few days. Can you be confident that the productivity benefits that you observe would persist for months or years?
Absolutely not. I would be shocked if these productivity benefits persisted for a long amount of time. And I think that's a natural consequence of how attention works. I think people, whether it's poor workers in the US or poor workers in India, tend to have cyclicality. I got my paycheck, now that money's run out and I'm waiting for the next paycheck. And that's a period of time where I'm feeling especially financially strained. And so I think that we did this, people were able to pay off loans. But if 2 months later, they've accrued loans again, it's not clear that our very tiny intervention could possibly be expected to have persistent impact. So I don't think that's the margin along which this kind of intervention could work.
If you made the intervention just part of their lives and lessened their financial strain, then you believe that their productivity would permanently be shifted up?
I do think that that is a plausible outcome, and it's one that I would love to be able to explore and investigate more fully.
So I'm going to make you policymaker, Supreet, in that case, and you can design policy based on this effect. What would you like to do? How big do you think the effect could be compared to the other ways in which you could intervene in their lives?
Of course, as a policymaker, if you have unlimited amounts of money, you can just go around and hand people cash. But that's expensive, yeah. And that's, you know, infeasible.
I'm ruling that out for you.
Exactly.
Yes.
But if you notice, what we did is something that was, in fact, much more modest than giving people cash. We didn't give them any extra money because everybody was paid the same amount at the end. What we did for our workers is we just helped them smooth out the cash that they were going to get. And so this seems to be relevant and important in a lot of contexts. To give you some examples, food stamp recipients in the U.S. have been shown to exhibit this sort of cyclicality where in the beginning of the month, they're eating more calories because they've just gotten their food stamps for the month. By the end of the month, they're reducing calories because they've run out of food stamps and they're strapped for cash. Similarly, in surveys where workers are paid monthly, you see that the financial worries of workers increase throughout the course of the month. So one policy lever that seems very straightforward is helping the poor access savings vehicles that let them smooth out the money they have so it can stretch the next paycheck, so that you can provide some smoothness where otherwise there would be volatility, because we as human beings have a tough time doing that for ourselves. And more generally, I'm a big proponent of helping people improve their financial security through savings, because it does seem to be that the poor tend to have very low savings stocks and buffer stocks. About half of our workers say that it would be difficult for them to come up with just 1,000 rupees in an emergency. 1,000 rupees is just 4 days of earnings, and they don't even have that much on hand. And so I think that if people were able to have those buffers, then the shocks they face in life, one can't, you know, do a lot about in a very easy way. But when those shocks do arrive, then at least they have the ability to get through them without doing things like very expensive loans and having this big financial stress burden that comes from the emergencies that those shocks create.
Now, when I looked around, it seemed to me that there wasn't a great deal of research yet about the impact of financial strain on persistent poverty, the sort of research that you're doing here. Do we still have quite a lot to learn about it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that this study is a very nascent one for this literature. And to begin with, I would even like to see this study replicated in other settings to just broaden our understanding of, you know, under what conditions can just this very simple intervention that we did deliver these kinds of outsized effects. And then I think we also want to understand some of the underlying mechanisms. So why is it so hard for people to accumulate or hold on to savings? What are the ways through which people's attention is captured and bandwidth is taxed, you know, when they encounter financial stress? What other aspects of their lives does this affect? Does it affect whether, you know, they talk to their kids when they come home from work at night and read to them and help them with their homework? Does it affect whether they decide to save that dollar or rather spend it because life is just really hard and, you know, we need a break? And so we're going to go and do something that helps alleviate some of the tension that we have. Understanding the various aspects of decision-making that are affected, as well as the conditions that lead to this financial strain, are both really important directions for future research.
Well, there's going to be some fascinating research probably coming out of this in the next few years. I imagine you'll probably be doing some of it. So, Preet, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper we've been discussing is called Does Financial Strain Lower Productivity? And the authors are Supreet Kaur, Sendhil Mulanathan, Suanna Oh, and Frank Schilbach. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. You can find more of our episodes at voxdev.org, and don't forget to subscribe to Vox Dev Talks on your podcast platform.